The EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan Lewis brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's EWTN Rome Bureau Chief, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to a new edition of Vatican Insider, where I look at the news of the week at the Vatican and offer an interview with a prominent personality and a Q&A segment. Before we look at the news highlights, I'll tell you about my guest in the interview segment. It's part two of last week's talk with John Schlageter, Executive Director of the Bethlehem University Foundation. John and I have been friends for years, and we talk about Bethlehem University, the foundation, John's work, and the situation in the Holy Land, among many fascinating topics. And now the news headlines. Sunday at the Angelus, Pope Francis marked Italy's Day for Life by focusing on creating a culture of life and protecting life at all stages. He called on the faithful to join Italian bishops in promoting a culture of life in which, quote, no one is left alone, each life is sacred. So let's pray together for those children who risk a pregnancy termination and for those who are nearing the end of life. May no one be left alone, and may love defend the sense of life. Quoting St. Teresa of Calcutta, who said, life is beauty, admire it. Life is life, fight for it. The Pope stressed this is true for the child about to be born and for the person who is about to die, as every life is sacred. Francis, a big soccer fan, also prepared a video that was shown on the mega screens at Sunday's Super Bowl football game in Houston, Texas, urging Americans to make this year's game a sign of peace, friendship, and solidarity to the world. He pointed out that great sporting events like this championship game are highly symbolic and show it's possible to build a culture of encounter and a world of peace. There was a press conference to unveil the Pope's message for the 2017 World Day of the Sick, to be celebrated in Lourdes, France, on February 11th, Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes. The Vatican also unveiled a new charter for healthcare workers that, quote, reaffirms the sacredness of life and its indispensability inasmuch as it is a gift from God. The charter provides encouragement and guidance for healthcare workers in coping with three stages of human life: generating life, living, and dying. On generating, the document affirms the Church's teaching on the immorality of abortion and destructive embryo research. It calls for treating infertility problems only by natural methods without destroying unborn lives. The living section includes articles on topics as diverse as anencephaly, ectopic pregnancy, and embryo reduction. The section on dying stresses the need to respect the dignity of the person, providing care but not extraordinary or burdensome treatment for those who are terminally ill. Also Monday, we learned that Pope Francis has donated 200,000 euros to the Bangui Children's Hospital in the Central African Republic. He did so that it can care for all poor children without distinction of religious belonging, because all children need care and attention. Tuesday, the Vatican published Pope Francis' message for Lent 2017, entitled The Word is a Gift, Other Persons are a Gift. He reflected on Christ's parable of the rich man and Lazarus, saying, let us find inspiration in this meaningful story, for it provides a key to understanding what we need to do in order to attain true happiness and eternal life. It has three parts. The other person is a gift, sin blinds us, and part three, the word is a gift. Wednesday at the general audience, the Pope continued his catechesis on Christian hope, noting that especially in times of darkness and difficulty, hope is no easy virtue. He said Christian hope is intensely personal, yet also communitarian. Like St. Paul encouraged the early church, we too must sustain one another in hope through mutual prayer and practical concern for those in need. This support, he said, must be given especially to the poor, the weak in faith, the suffering, and those tempted to despair. Each one of us and all of us must be living signs of hope for the entire human family, said Francis. Also Wednesday, marking Wednesday's International Day of Prayer and Awareness Against Human Trafficking, and focusing this year on the trafficking of children and adolescents, the Pope had words of encouragement for all those who in different ways help minors who have been enslaved and abused to be freed from this terrible oppression. He said all efforts must be made to eradicate this shameful and intolerable crime on our younger brothers and sisters who have been wounded in their dignity. Also with the audience, Pope Francis asked for prayers for the Rohingya people in Myanmar, who are persecuted and forced to flee from their homes. They are good people. They are not Christians. They are peaceful people. They are our brothers and sisters, and for years they have been suffering. They are being tortured and killed simply because they uphold their Muslim faith. Thursday was a really busy day for Pope Francis. He met with Jesuits who write for the Civiltà Cattolica magazine this week in its 4,000th edition, and he reflected at length on the importance of poetry, art, and pioneering intellectual research as the magazine seeks to build bridges with many peoples and cultures. Civiltà Cattolica was founded in 1850 and originally available only in Italian, but now in English, French, Spanish, and Korean. Francis, who said a copy of the magazine is, quote, often on my desk, described its history as a boat's voyage on the open seas, saying writers must never be afraid of the storms, but proceed courageously, guided by the Spirit, into uncharted waters. Also Thursday, Pope Francis met a delegation from the Anti-Defamation League, encouraging them to cultivate justice and foster accord, saying the fight against anti-Semitism can benefit from effective instruments such as information and formation. The Anti-Defamation League was founded in 1913 to stop the defamation of the Jewish people and to secure justice and fair treatment for all. Also Thursday, in his remarks to the Congregation for Catholic Education, as members meet in plenary session, the Holy Father urged all those involved in Catholic education to be builders of a more united and peaceful world, especially when educating the younger generations. Educational institutes, he said, have meaning only in relation to the formation of the person. He said, another of your prime missions is to offer horizons that are open to transcendence. Francis also stressed the need for a culture of dialogue, something he says to many groups that he addresses. He said, our world has become a global village in which each person belongs to humanity and shares in the hope for a better future for the whole family of nations. Friday, in addition to private audiences with ranking officials of the Roman Curia, Pope Francis addressed participants in a meeting promoted by the Charity and Health Commission of the Italian Bishops' Conference, and this happened on the vigil of the 25th World Day of the Sick. He spoke about the lights and shadows in the healthcare sector, thanking God for the many healthcare professionals who live their work like a mission with knowledge and conscience. He also noted the advancements in scientific research, the missionary zeal of healthcare professionals, and the numerous volunteers who seek to relieve and humanize the long and difficult days of many sick and elderly people. Among the shadows, said Francis, if there's a sector in which the throwaway culture makes most visible its painful consequences, it is exactly that of healthcare. When a sick person is not placed at the center and considered in their dignity, attitudes arise that can even lead to profiteering on other people's misfortunes. Those are the news highlights of a busy week at the Vatican, and now stay here for the Q&A and my conversation with John Schlageter of the Bethlehem University Foundation.
On 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The second commandment, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. The disclosure of a name in the ancient world belonged to the order of trust and intimacy. And so when God revealed his name to Moses, it was an extraordinary outreach to us, saying that we were called to an intimate, trusting relationship with him. And so we should always reverence this name as a great, great gift. We should obviously never use God's name to curse or to blaspheme or to berate others. That's wholly inappropriate. God's name is meant to bring blessing. And likewise, the vain use. Vain means empty. And so some of these expressions like, oh my God, or, you know, and so on, need to be avoided as well. Vain means empty, and those are using God's name as an empty kind of expression of exasperation. And then finally, never ever to use God's name to swear an oath falsely. The second commandment, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Now, Joan Lewis answers your questions in this week's Q&A.
Today's question from James in Iowa is, does the Catholic Church have an equivalent of SCOTUS, Supreme Court of the United States? Well, yes, indeed it does, and it is called the Apostolic Signatura, S-I-G-N-A-T-U-R-A. Founded in the 15th century, its full name is Supreme Tribunal of the Apostolic Signatura, and it's the highest judicial authority in the Church, although the Pope himself, as Supreme Ecclesiastical Judge, is the final point of appeal for any ecclesiastical judgment. The Signatura is headed by a Cardinal Prefect. The Apostolic Signatura only hears appeals from the Church's other two tribunals, the Roman Rota and the Apostolic Penitentiary, whose areas of jurisdiction include, respectively, marriage cases and matters pertaining to the sacrament of penance. These courts normally have final and universal appellate jurisdiction over their respective areas of competence, that is to say, authority or jurisdiction, but matters go to the Signatura if some process was in error or there's an interagency conflict. The Signatura has competence, again, that's authority or jurisdiction, as an administrative tribunal to deal with controversies over administrative decisions made by or approved by departments of the Roman Curia, if it is contended that the decision violated some law, either in the decision-making process or in the procedure used. It can also deal with administrative controversies referred to it by the Pope or those departments, and with conflicts of competence between the departments. Another area of jurisdiction for the Signatura is that of overseeing all the tribunals of the Catholic Church, with power to extend the jurisdiction of tribunals, to grant dispensation from procedural laws, to establish interdiocesan tribunals, and to discipline canonical advocates. Well, I hope that wasn't too much legalese for everybody, but in essence, a simple question and answer. Yes, the Church has a Supreme Court, and it is called the Apostolic Signatura.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Those of you that are Catholic and have gone to confession with quite a load have experienced a joy that no other thing will give you. There is something about hearing, I absolve you from all your sin. Why? In His own name? No, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. So I know for sure I am forgiven. There's nothing. And those of you that are not Catholic and don't have that particular sacrament, there's nothing like kneeling down in your living room or even sitting in your car and with a sorrowful heart say, Lord, I am deeply sorry and I'm going to try very hard never to do that again. Forgive me. Then the Spirit comes along with hope and joy and peace.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider and part two of my conversation with John Schlageter, Executive Director of the Bethlehem University Foundation. John and I have been friends for years, starting when he was a lawyer for the Military Ordinariate of the United States, specializing in First Amendment rights. We had a long visit recently when I was in Washington, and I asked John to speak of his new position as Executive Director of the Foundation. We talk about Bethlehem University, the Foundation, John's work, and the situation in the Holy Land, among many fascinating topics. Part 1 aired last weekend. John starts Part 2 by telling us how to visit Bethlehem University online and how to learn more about the foundation he directs. And by the way, If you join a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, ask the tour director if it includes a visit to Bethlehem University.
What site should they visit for the university and for the foundation?
Sure. John, the website for the university is very easy. It's www.bethlehem.edu. The foundation's website is www.bufusa.org for Bethlehem University Foundation USA.org. And you can learn more about the foundation. But more important, I think, it's to learn about the university and see just the pictures speak for themselves.
And, John, let's talk about gift giving, because there's many ways to do that. There's one-time gift. People probably know this maybe through their own colleges. There's bequests one can make in a trust or in a will. But there was one really amazing donation made several months ago of a to the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre, and we haven't talked enough about that and its role with the university and what we do in the Middle East. We support schools and orphanages and maternity hospitals and whatever people need to keep them alive, to keep Christianity alive. This is what the order tries to do. But tell us about this amazing gift that was made last fall.
The Equestrian Order, as you said, was created during the time of the Crusades to preserve the Christian communities. And the Middle Atlantic Lieutenancy, which is a section of the order, my lieutenancy, and you're in the Roman Lieutenancy, so I think you're at headquarters. But the lieutenancy decided that they wanted to make a gift to Bethlehem University, but to also remember the remarkable life of our former Grand Master, who is Cardinal John Foley.
A wonderful friend to all of us, individually and to thousands throughout the world, and his amazing life.
A prince of a man. I think that's the only way to describe Cardinal Foley. So via the foundation, I announced that the university was expanding one of its buildings to expand the School of Nursing. And the lieutenancy approached me and said, you know, we'd like to help with this project. And it turned out that they were willing to give $1.5 million to expand this school. And that will be dedicated in a year or two, I hope, but named after Cardinal Foley. And Cardinal Foley, I remember a great story of Cardinal Foley. He couldn't figure out, he said this at the Red Mass in Washington a few years ago. He said he wasn't sure if he was going to be a priest or a journalist. And so he was teaching religion courses at his local parish church. And one of the teachers, the principal, came in and asked the students, "Do you like Mr. Foley?" And one of the girls jumped up and said, "We love Mr. Foley." And the principal sort of was taken aback and said, well, why do you love Mr. Foley?" And the little girl said, "Because he teaches us about Jesus." And Cardinal Foley said to the packed crowd at St. Matthew's Cathedral, "It was right then and there that I knew that I was to become a priest." And we as an order were so fortunate because Cardinal Foley taught us about Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so to honor him with a building with his name in the town where Christianity was born, I can't think of a more suitable way. And so I am over the moon. Knowing how much Cardinal Foley loved the Holy Land, but in a particular way loved Bethlehem University, that his name will be on what is going to be one of the nicest buildings on campus when it's completed.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. And, of course, he headed the order for a number of years. His successor is Cardinal Edwin O'Brien, obviously, who, as a matter of fact, did you work with him at any point? Because
he headed
the military ordinariate, where you were a lawyer for so many years.
Yes, when Cardinal O'Brien was the Archbishop for Military Services, he hired me. And then he left a few months later to go to Baltimore. But I can say that I was the lawyer for the Grand Master, which was quite an honor. And Cardinal O'Brien and I remain friends today.
Now, John, when you get up each morning, what is your focus? Is it getting new initiatives? Is it preparing a talk that you're going to give while traveling? Is it, oh, my word, we have to focus, you know, on getting something like another bequest to build something else at the university? Or is it kind of all of the above?
Well, I think, Joan, the duty of this foundation and the reason that it was created was to support the university. And so every morning I think of the students and I think, what can we do to make their life a little bit better? How can we improve this university? And so if it's going out and raising money, then that's what I have to do that day. If it's to give a speech to a group of Catholics who don't know about the university, then by doing that, sharing that story, I'm helping those students. But I think the most important thing that I can do is to encourage every Catholic and every Christian who visits the university, visits the Holy Land, yeah, to stop at the university,
yeah,
meet the students, talk to them. You know, it's one thing to see religious sites, but it's another thing to encounter that Christian community. I have students that I've spoken to at the university, and I've said, what's the most frustrating question that you get from Americans? And they said, the question we get that's most frustrating is people ask, when did you become a Christian? As though we converted in the last 10 years. And the answer to that question is, when did we become Christians? The Palestinian Christians are the first Christians. They gave Christianity to the world. And so I think we owe them the ability to stay in that land and to stay true to the faith where the faith was founded. And so I think this university and my job in supporting this university is to make sure Christ and the Christian faith remains in Bethlehem, remains in the Holy Land, while also having Christians and Muslims dialogue and work together, building a future together.
And I think, John, that as we were also talking about lunch, I learned a lot on my first trip to the Holy Land. And one of the things that I learned at an age, you know, later in life than I probably should have, was the fact that if you say Arab and Palestinian, most people can automatically think of Muslim, but there are Arab-Palestinian Catholics. How many Catholic friends do I have that are Arabs and Palestinians? Now, I want to ask you, have you had a chance to sit down and just talk with the students? We can't talk about the university, about where it is today, without talking about the difficult Israeli Palestinian, you know, the crisis, the building of settlements, the building of a wall, the search for peace. What are students telling you? What are you hearing from students?
The one thing that I hear from students is that it's very difficult. It's very difficult to live. Now, no matter where you come out on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, you have to realize that when we're talking about Christians in the Holy Land, we are talking about Palestinians. They are the Christian community. Mm-hmm. There are a few ethnic minorities, but the majority of Christians in the Holy Land are the native Palestinians. It's difficult. Bethlehem, O little town where Christianity was founded, is not an O little town anymore. It's a major city. But it's a city that's been under military occupation for many years. It's not an easy life to be under military occupation. And a number of the Christians have left. They've just packed up their bags. The Christians who are there, who remain, and the students of Bethlehem University, many of them could leave. But they stay because for them that's their cross. Mm-hmm. It is their job to keep the faith in the land where the faith was born.
Exactly. And I have some very good friends whose oldest daughter is a pianist. And I remember when I met them, they lived in Bethlehem, and she could not get to a piano concert in Jerusalem because they would not let her leave what is now the state of Palestine. I think we should be clear on that. They would not let her leave to go into Jerusalem. And just as an aside, when she knocked on the door of a house and she went back home, and her dad said, "What are you doing here?" And she said, "Well, they wouldn't let me leave to go to the concert." They went to the school where she was taking her piano lessons, very rundown building, but anyway, they went to her school. Her father had a way of setting up with some electricians and everything else, a remote in a room. They were linked remotely to the concert in Jerusalem. Mira played her particular piece, and she actually won, she won the contest. But still, I mean, the difficult life. She couldn't go out and practice and play and be in concerts elsewhere. So you're right, what you've been saying about these students, their amazing ability to be resilient, to want to have hope. And, you know, if you don't have hope, you don't really have anything else. Now, is there any last word, John, you'd like to say about the foundation of the university, or just a message to my listeners about something they may not know about the Middle East, the Holy Land, the university?
Sure. I think one of the other keys to this university is, as a major Catholic institution in the town of Bethlehem, the university is also an economic provider. It's keeping not just the students, but also the community in Bethlehem employed, and it's creating stability. And so in that way, I see my role in running this foundation. I did it because of my membership in the Equestrian Order, is the developing and maintaining the whole person in the Holy Land, not just the students, but providing support to the whole community. And the university provides so many resources to the local community. But I think that Christians in the Holy Land, and I think, Joan, you would agree with this, are almost an endangered species.
Yeah.
That you and I run the risk of visiting places like Jerusalem, Nazareth, Bethlehem, and in 20 years not encountering Christians. That these cities, the Christians will have just left. And I think that that's very scary to me.
Tragic and scary, yes.
And so I think anything we can do to support those communities is so vital. But I think it's education. I think that most Americans don't know what it's like to be a Christian living in the Holy Land. We see the horrible stories coming out of Iraq and Syria, but I think learning about what it's like to be a Christian in Jerusalem is a very important thing. And what has happened to Bethlehem over the last 50 years as Christians have left? I think we as a community of faith have to know what our brothers and sisters go through.
It's almost an obligation, really, to lose that footprint of Christianity in the very land where Christ left his own footprints. Just it cannot be allowed. So, you know, what I should have done halfway through our conversation is reintroduce John. That's the radio host thing to do. I forgot, but we've been talking with John Schlageter, and he's the executive director of the Foundation for Bethlehem University. So folks, go online, look at the university, look at the foundation, and you know what? Go online and find a group that's going to the Holy Land. And when you get there, make a point of going to the university. And if you're not sure how to do that, you know how to contact me. And if you want to be in touch with John, that'll be on the foundation website. So, John, heartfelt thanks for taking time out. We've both had some amazingly busy schedules in recent days, and I thank you for taking this time to let everybody know about the wonderful institution called Bethlehem University.
Thank you, Joan. Wonderful to be with you. I will see you in Rome in April, but next year in Jerusalem.
You got it.
Thanks, Joan. Great.
God bless you and your ministry.